Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, June 9th, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut, Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney and working from my home studio in New York. Well, today we're going to be talking with Vanderbilt baseball coach Tim Corbin in advance of the Major League Baseball draft about one of the best players in the draft, but also how he feels about the five-round structure and how it'll affect college baseball moving forward. Tim Kirchin will join us, and we're going to be hearing a lot from you, the listeners. More on that in a moment. Let's start with this note. Theo Epstein, head of baseball operations for the Cubs, told reporters that he is questioning his own hiring practices in light of the social unrest following the killing of George Floyd on May 25th in Minneapolis. The quote from Theo, "I've hired a black scouting director, farm director in the past, but the majority of people that I've hired, if I'm being honest, have similar backgrounds as me and look a lot like me. That's something I need to ask myself why. I need to question my own assumptions, my own attitudes. I need to find a way to be better. At this moment in time," Theo said, "silence is complicity, and it's important that all of our voices are heard." And of course, there is this. The players in Major League Baseball remain miles apart in their talks toward an agreement to resume baseball in 2020. Major League Baseball's latest proposal to players on a return to play economic package offered a higher potential salary than the last plan, but less guaranteed money over a 76-game season. Players and officials at the Major League Baseball Players Association quickly scoffed at the proposal, which was obtained by ESPN, by Jeff Passan. And as he wrote, Major League Baseball's proposal, which was delivered on Monday afternoon, included potential earnings that would cover up to 75% of players' prorated salaries over a 76-game season, about $1.432 billion in total compensation. Of that, $989 million would be in straight salary, $443 million in money paid if the playoffs actually take place. In addition, individuals at high risk of contracting the coronavirus could opt out of the 2020 season and retain their salaries and service time. So we are still way, way, way far apart. Now, before we get to Tim Corbin and the voices of fans, don't forget this Sunday, June 14th at 9 p.m. Eastern time is ESPN's latest 30 for 30, Long Gone Summer. Of course, about the summer of 1998 with Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. And then after that, you can listen to Jalen Jacoby's The After Show podcast with Long Gone Summer director A.J. Schnock. You can find that wherever you get your podcast. And a reminder that all 30 for 30 films are available on ESPN Plus immediately after airing. So we've heard from the union in these negotiations. We've heard from Major League Baseball, but we haven't heard from fans. And so what we're going to do on the podcast today is hear from you, the listeners, directly, to find out how you're feeling about what's going on with Major League Baseball.
Bleacher Tweets.
Frank Bonsiglio is a bleacher tweeter known as Cinegrades. He's in Colorado. He's a New York Yankees fan. Question of the day, Frank, how you feeling about the baseball negotiations?
Well, to be honest, Buster, right now I'm just feeling disappointed. I think that's the word I've used the most, especially after seeing Adam Silver and Chris Paul with the NBA seem to so seamlessly draft a return plan. And here we are with the union and Major League Baseball still struggling with negotiations. I think the word disorganized, it makes me wonder what was taking place in the month of April, and even an overwhelming sense of just feeling disconnected. I once had a teacher tell me they can't care more about grades than me. And right now it really feels like we as the fans care more about a 2020 season at times than the players and the owners. Outside of perhaps Bryce Harper, there really haven't been a lot of posts from players, even simple posts like, "We miss you guys. We're working hard to make this happen. See you soon." Even just those words would give me so much hope right now when it's really needed. And in a sport that already feels like we are less connected than other of the major sports, it really seems like a missed opportunity. I mean, can you imagine if there was a player who just constantly, or even an owner, just constantly posted, missing the game right now, had their own version of a Tim Kirchin baseball fix, or even posted their own baseball speech from the Field of Dreams, that they would be so beloved. I just feel so disconnected from the players right now and really disappointed.
How does this affect the way you feel about Major League Baseball's product?
Honestly, for that, my good friend Aaron from San Diego and I, we call every Friday, and the first half hour of our phone calls, honestly, is us dissecting all of your podcasts from the week. And last week, we had this exact conversation. We were talking about on your episode where you mentioned the 96 Yankees and the 98 home run chase as a way to bring a lot of fans back. And, you know, we were young when the strike happened. So we were placing ourselves in those moments and thinking, what major event for each team probably brought fans back? And we were wondering if it would have taken that event to bring us back. And we both said, no, it would not have. We love the game too much. So honestly, Buster, when baseball is back, all is forgiven for me. Love it too much to ever hold that much of a grudge against it. But right now, definitely just feeling disappointed.
Speaking of Aaron Oakley is a Tigers fan who grew up in Toledo. He lives in San Diego now. We just got done talking with Frank, and I'll pose the same question to you, Aaron, that I did to him. How are you feeling about the baseball negotiations?
You know, I think two main pieces definitely come to my mind. The first is that when there are money disputes between players, the players' union and the owners, I always find myself to be heavily pro-player. I fully understand that nobody wants to hear monetary arguments between millionaires and billionaires, especially in this time. However, I think this is because the majority of us cannot comprehend the difference between these two numbers in terms of money. I myself, as a teacher, am nowhere near either of these numbers. So we need to find a different lens to better try to understand. So I would actually like to invite both of you to take part in a quick game I like to play with my math students to help them better understand these two numbers. And who knows, maybe Todd Radom will even count this toward his overall score on the uniform and logo quiz for them.
Okay, let's hear it.
All right. So something that we can all comprehend a little better than money is time. So Buster and Taylor, if you had your best guess, how long is 1 million seconds?
Wow. Taylor, you want to go?
Oh, boy. I have not a single clue. Let's go 6 months. Complete guess.
Okay.
Man, I'm going to go the over.
Okay. So 1 million seconds is actually just 11 and a half days.
Wow.
11 and a half days. But now that you have that piece of information, how long do you believe would be 1 billion seconds?
Like off the top of my head, I probably could have done this when I was back in high school, but not now. My brain doesn't work that fast. You got a guess, Taylor?
I am numbers illiterate. Let's call it a year. No idea.
All right.
So this one is 31 and three quarters years.
Wow,
man.
So the difference between 11 and a half days and 31 and three quarters years is the difference between 1 million and 1 billion in terms of something that most of us can comprehend. So this is quite drastic. And I think if more fans were able to see this difference, it would be clear to us that the owners are definitely the ones who need to take on quite a bit more of the loss. But as you know, we have all talked about, unfortunately, in our economic system, those who have the most money also hold the most power and leverage. And ultimately, I think the players will have to ask themselves the pivotal question of, would we rather hold out for the money that we deserve, or would we rather have one more chance at the reason we all play this game, which is obviously to win a World Series?
That's a great example. It's why I thought going into the week that the owners needed to step out further into the middle ground. That obviously didn't happen with the offer that we heard yesterday. How does this affect the way that you feel about the baseball product as a consumer?
Yeah, definitely. You know, for me personally, as an avid baseball fan, it's tough. I'm sad that we don't have baseball. The day that we had to postpone the season was a very sad day, but obviously that was for a very good reason, and that was understood. Now that it's time to get going, and we possibly could get going, but we can't because of money disputes, it's become pretty tough. But I don't think that it will change much for me once we get back. I know I'll be one of the first in line to get to the stadium, hopefully next year if we can have fans. Because I'm an avid baseball fan and I think this is the most beautiful game we have. I understand that it might change temporarily for more casual fans, such as what had happened in 94. However, I am under the impression that baseball did not necessarily need the 96 Yankees that you had mentioned, Buster, or the home run chase between McGuire and Sosa to bring it back. I do think fans were hurt, but I more strongly believe that we all have a romanticism for the game, and that's what ultimately will bring us back. I think that money disputes will certainly come and go, but will always prevail.
Rena Wong is known on Twitter as Rena Benina. You've heard her as the presenter of Bleacher Tweets in past seasons, and hopefully if we get baseball this year, you're going to hear her again. She lives in Minneapolis, a crazy Twins fan. Rena, the question of the day, how are you feeling about the baseball negotiations?
Baseball negotiations. Well, let's put it this way. Whenever I start to think about them, my mood pretty instantly shifts to frustrated and extremely pessimistic. So that's how I'm feeling about the baseball negotiations.
If you were to blame one side or the other, would you blame owners? Would you blame players? Would you blame both?
I would blame owners 100%. I mean, I think that the fact that people are quicker in general to blame the players is because you see the guy getting the $100 million check, but you never really think about the person writing it. And I think that it's not ridiculous, you know, to want to be paid for your work. I mean, that seems like a pretty easy concept to grasp, in my opinion.
How does this affect you and how you feel about the Major League Baseball product?
The fact that it's June and they've had almost 3 months to come up with a product for the season gives off a big air of indifference, I think, to the consumer. I mean, again, it's not a stretch of the imagination that the players want to play games. And the fact that they're going back and forth to the point that the fans can't even keep track of what happened in the past 2 weeks really just almost gives off that they don't care. They don't really care if it comes back. They don't really care if the season goes on. They don't really care about the longevity of the game. And if it doesn't happen, I think that general consumers will tend to agree.
PK Steinberg is one of our regular Bleacher tweeters. He lives in the Philadelphia area. And PK, I'll put the same question to you that I put to others. How are you feeling about the baseball negotiations, the way they're playing out?
To be honest, I'd rather not have it be so public. It's airing dirty laundry, it seems like.
What do you think about the back and forth and how this has taken a long time?
I think it's taking too long and it's turning ugly. And I just don't understand why they can't. I guess I understand they can't meet in a closed room because of the situation going on in the world. But I wish that they would somehow be able to sit down for a day or two on Zoom or on the phone, hash it out, and come to a resolution to either play or not play.
Now, since you're listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast, we know you are a hardcore baseball fan. Your questions reflect that, too, on the Bleacher Tweets. How does this affect the way you feel as a consumer of the Major League Baseball product?
I miss it. I miss it very much. I miss not having it every day to watch or to listen to. I miss not going to the ballpark. And when they do start playing, provided it's safe to have fans there, and even the players for that matter, I will be back in the stands. I love the sport. I love its history. I think it's vital to our way of living, and it's a great distraction.
The Bleacher tweeter known as CrossFit School of Sweat, his real name is Brian Stoneking. And Brian, the question of the day, how are you feeling about the baseball negotiations?
I'm sick of it. I don't need to know about it anymore. Unfortunately, that's all the news we're getting these days. The owners are the billionaires. They have all the money. but I'm sure they don't make all their money from their baseball teams, and they don't want that particular business to lose money. I understand that. The players, they get paid for playing baseball. They get paid a lot of money, and they want to make as much as they can. I understand that. It's none of my business. That's my take on it.
How does this affect the way that you feel about the Major League Baseball product as a consumer?
I can't wait to watch baseball games again. It doesn't affect the only thing it affects is that I'm not getting to watch it. I will still tune in. I will still watch my Red Sox. I will still root against the Yankees. I will still go to games when the Red Sox come to town. I'm in SoCal, so I go to Angel games. I will still go. It won't change one thing. I'm still a fan.
And what's your one superstition when you watch a game?
Superstition when I watch a game? I really don't have any superstitions.
Man! I didn't know if you had a favorite jersey you like to watch in, or you got to wear a cap.
No.
Okay.
No, I'm not a jersey guy. I don't even own any jerseys. I just watch the games and have a good time.
Debbie Gammons Brown is a crazy Red Sox fan who has moved to Philadelphia recently. And Debbie, question of the day, how are you feeling about the baseball negotiations?
It's frustrating, and I'm discouraged, and I'm growing increasingly disinterested. I feel like you keep saying, this is going to be the drop dead date of when they're going to make these decisions. And I'm becoming less and less interested because hearing about billionaires bickering with millionaires is just not striking a chord right now. At a time when people are standing in food lines and losing their jobs. And I think the product that they're talking about bringing back isn't necessarily the baseball that I love. And quite frankly, I can't quite figure out why baseball is having such a hard time with this when sports like basketball and hockey, which to me seem like they would have far greater concerns on the disease and COVID and, bodily contact and enclosed arenas, they seem to be able to getting their act together, and baseball can't. So it's really discouraging and tiresome.
Real quick, do you blame the owners, the players, or both?
I blame both. I mean, I can't really pick a side. I think they're both at fault. I think they both have their arguments, but it's hard to agree with players bickering over millions of dollars when people are out of work, and billionaire owners. I mean, I work for a small family owned business here in Philadelphia, and he could have furloughed us all, and he's furloughed not one of his workers. So it's impossible to see either side.
How does this affect the way that you feel about baseball as a consumer of the product?
I mean, I love baseball. I mean, I probably say it's my favorite sport. I'm a huge sports fan. I'd say it's probably my favorite sport, and it probably would never not be my favorite sport. But this leaves a sour taste in my mouth. And again, as I was sort of suggesting earlier, that the product they're talking about bringing back, whether it's, 48 games or 72 games or whatever the case may be, in neutral locations, a tournament style. I mean, that's not really the baseball that I know and love as much as I would love to see any form of baseball. But I think when you're talking about baseball that's not at Fenway Park or Yankee Stadium or Wrigley Field, but at these neutral locations, it just sort of sounds like a neutered version of the game. Whereas, hockey and basketball can come back and sort of be closer to normal. So, I don't know. It pains me to say it, but it's not looking good, and it's not making me feel great about the sport.
Next up in the All-Star lineup of Bleacher Tweeters, Jason Amico. He's a Giants fan who lives in Connecticut. And Jason, question of the day, how are you feeling about the baseball negotiations?
Yeah, what's going on, Buster? I really appreciate you having me on. I just wanted to start off, obviously, right now, this discussion, I feel like in comparison to the larger national discourse going on right now about racial injustice, baseball feels relatively insignificant, but I think it's something that brings us so much joy, so much happiness, so it's still important. But as far as the labor strife between the players and owners, I think I'm someone who's an avid lover of baseball history. Dating back, you know, thinking about John Thorne, the great MLB historian, Roger Angel in the vein of Bob Costas. And I think this harkens back to the longstanding history and the, you know, the implementation and execution of the reserve clause. And I think, you know, from that going forward with Marvin Miller, the monumental case with Curt Flood, later on Andy Messersmith and David McNally becoming the first free agents declared to lead the team they were drafted, obviously 81, 94. And I think it's been well documented on this podcast, Buster, you as well as Jeff Passan, obviously Ken Rosenthal, all have kind of touched on, you know, the inability of the players and owners to just get in the same room, I think has kind of manifested itself and it's been exacerbated by this pandemic situation. So obviously, like everyone else, I want baseball, but I definitely think it's important to keep in mind the history of everything going on.
How does this affect the way you feel about Major League Baseball as a consumer?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, obviously, you know, checking MLB at bat all the time, reading the news, and then, you know, not quite as maniacal as Tim Kirchin, but checking the box score every day. But I think one thing I think about, kind of inspired by your piece on the Wrigleyville hot dogs business, is, you know, back home in the Bay Area, friends of mine discussed how much they miss the center field treehouse at the Coliseum. Left field duels closed down due to a private investigation behind the owner's money, as well as coronavirus. The great Foley's in New York City has also experienced trouble due to coronavirus, and I think it's closed down. And then you think about Finnerty's, the great bar that I go to watch Coop and Kipe, John and Dave, has also been closed. So I think the way that, you know, a lot of these businesses that kind of have ripple effects or are sort of satellite, very, you know, dependent upon baseball, parallels the way that a lot of us as fans feel is, you know, they're unable to continue. And I think a lot of those businesses, you get so many casual fans, you get so many people who, you know, don't have as avid of appreciation of the game as we do, but still come, still pay, still watch baseball with their friends in large groups. So I think that's really important to keep in mind as well, is just how a lot of people have been adversely affected by this during the hiatus.
Amy Chapman, Bleacher Tweeter from Michigan. She's a Mets fan, but the Tigers are her favorite American League team. And Amy, the question of the day, how are you feeling about the baseball negotiations?
I don't think there's any way to feel anything other than frustrated about it. It just, every day seems like, it does seem like Groundhog Day. I know you related it to the War of the Roses, but I feel like this is more like Groundhog Day.
I'm glad that you, did you agree with my my comparison with the War of the Roses when I mentioned that to Hembo?
You know, I did, but I felt badly thinking that because that, I don't want, spoiler alert, it doesn't end well in that movie. And I hope it ends a lot better for baseball this year.
How does this affect the way that you feel about, as a consumer, about the Major League Baseball product?
You know, I've been trying to consume other things to, you know, keep me in the baseball frame of mind. I initially didn't watch Korean baseball because I thought it would make me sad, but now I really kind of enjoy it. I've been listening to more baseball podcasts. But, you know, I guess this makes me nervous about what, you know, I don't know if I trust the people in charge to put this back on track. And then the other thing that I'm still concerned about, frankly, is being in a ballpark with a bunch of other folks. So I feel like it's sort of a two-edged sword here in terms of, like, I'm not sure they're getting it together, which infuriates me as a fan. And also, I'm not sure how I would feel, even if they got it together and said fans could go back, I'm not sure I would feel like going back.
Amy, who do you blame, the players, the owners, or both?
I really blame the owners on this. Honestly, I feel like in the long history of baseball, the owners have really had to be pushed on most things that affected the players and equity, you know, going back to the Marvin Miller days. and then just looking at the latest proposals, which are basically all the same on money. And I get it. A lot of the players are millionaires in this current environment, but I feel like the owners, like, it doesn't feel like they're coming back with more. They're just coming back with the same proposal for the same amount of money and hoping that somehow that's going to be okay. And, you know, I'm not going to both sides of this. I'm definitely more on the player side, even though I see the challenges and, you know, I don't feel great about how the negotiations are going. I sort of long for the Marvin Miller, you know, and other player association leaders who have been, frankly, more labor attorneys on this than what they currently have.
Tim Corbin is the head coach of Vanderbilt University, and his teams have twice won the College World Series. Every year you hear the names of players on his team called in the draft, and that'll happen again early this year. Corbs, I thanks for joining us. I got to believe that, you know, this unusual situation, that you're probably getting even more calls from teams as they just search for information.
Yeah, you know, some. I wouldn't say a ton, but, you know, Mike Baxter, our assistant, and Brownie, Scott Brown, our pitching coach, do as well. So we will get some calls, maybe not as many as I would think, but that's okay. I know the industry's study these kids themselves, but I'm just looking forward to seeing how it's going to play out.
All right, one of your guys, Austin Martin, is expected to be among the first picks in the draft. What can you tell us about him?
Well, he's really well-rounded. I mean, there's a lot of things that he can do, both offensively and defensively. The offensive side of things, he's very advanced, and it's because of his recognition skills. He just does a good job of recognizing the baseball. He's very quiet in his movements. But when he turns the bat over, he gets to the middle of the ball, Buster. He just doesn't strike out much. He puts the ball in play. He's got gap power. He competes. You know, I think the thing that I've said the most about him is he just keeps the game very simple. He just competes against the baseball. There's not a lot of ancillary ideas going on in his brain when he plays. And he's as good a competitor as we've had inside the program in the time that I've been in Vanderbilt. And, you know, from a defensive standpoint, I think he's that kid that you can see in the NFL how they're going after that multi-purpose athlete that can play a lot of positions defensively. And I feel like he's that similar kid from a baseball standpoint. He can play inside the infield, where he has a big effect on the game. And then I really feel like he can play center field. He's an efficient mover. He's a kid that's got an instinct for the ball that way too. And, you know, his decision-making skills at the plate, they transition over to the defensive side of things really well because he gets great jumps. His mind is always moving before his body. So he's just a quality player that, God willing, you know, he stays healthy, then he's going to play for quite a while.
You know, baseball scouts love their comps. For you, who's comparable among baseball players you've seen in the past to him?
Well, he's definitely his own kid, but, you know, you can see some, when you see him on the bases, you can see a Mookie Betts element to him because he always keeps his feet moving. You know, I got to see a lot of Mookie when he was a high school kid here at Overton. And just watching the athleticism as a young kid, and I see that in Marty too. You could comp him a little bit to Rendon as a hitter in terms of how they set up at the plate. But as I said, he's different. You know, he's his own guy. There's a lot of different things he can do, and I like the fact that Austin Martin is, you know, he's unique in terms of how he plays, but. There's certainly kind of a Mookie element into him because Mookie's one of those kids too that can play a lot of different positions too. But I'd say the offense plays more like Mookie in terms of he's going to find a lot of various ways to step on home plate. You know, it's balls in the gap. It's balls over the fence. It's, you know, it's taking extra bases when you're not paying attention. There's just an acumen to his game that's different.
That's as you were talking about Rendon, I was like, yeah, that's perfect because Rendon is similar and he seems to have a very simple approach. And as you know, too, like Rendon has this great, simple feel for the game.
Yeah, I think that's what it is, Buster, more than anything else. I don't know Rendon that well. I just admire him on TV, but I just think he keeps it he keeps it simple. I don't think there's a whole lot going on in his mind when he plays. And I also think that, you know, you've followed hitters for a long period of time. It's really how they can organize their mind on the next pitch and stay clear. And I think Rendon, it's sometimes he plays like a monk. You know, he's just very clear mentally. It looks like he's very settled in what he's doing. And as aggressive as Marty is too, Marty's very settled mentally and emotionally. He's emotionally stable when he plays. And those are the kids that there's just not a lot of peaks and valleys to their game. You know, you look at their resume over time, and it's just like a consistent flat line, but that flat line is always moving up northward. So I do think there's some great similarities that way.
Corbs, how'd you feel about Major League Baseball's decision to limit the draft to 5 rounds this year?
You know, you and I spoke about that. They have to do what they have to do, obviously. And personally, I'm just glad they have a draft, because we all knew that was a possibility that they weren't going to have one. The part that you and I have spoken to is, you know, in the college situation, the NCAA granted everyone an extra year, which means seniors could come back. And then, of course, everyone in their class, whether you're a freshman, sophomore, junior, you could redo. So it means that your current roster has a chance to be bigger than normal. Then if you take the draft, and not everyone's affected with the draft in the way that we might be, but you have some of these juniors who probably would sign if they were drafted in the top 5, 6, 7 rounds. Now you get a couple extra kids that won't be. You get some high school kids, obviously, that may get drafted but won't. And now you have kids coming in from the front end, the back end, and it makes for a high temperature situation inside your own program in terms of volume of players. So I think, you know, with the draft, they have to do what they have to do. The thing from it is you're going to see college baseball get better. There's going to be better players. There's going to be first rounders, Buster, that we would have seen become first rounders in April and May that were not, that will show up in school. And I'll tell you something else. You're going to see first rounders in junior college too, because some of these kids who may transfer from 4-year schools and end up going to junior colleges, the level of baseball at the junior college level is going to rise too. Now, this isn't going to be permanent, because I think baseball will certainly expand the roster. They have to at least go to 20 next year, I guess. But at least for the next couple of years, you're going to see some very good players at the amateur level.
You mentioned that high-pressure situation within programs. How are you dealing with that? In other words, in your conversations with your players? Because that would seem to be a challenge.
Well, it's always a challenge because, listen, you want to treat the kids well. I mean, as much as you want to compete and win, you want to provide everyone a fair and a good opportunity and a good experience. And I think the question you got to ask yourself as a coach is, are you able to do that? And I think I look at it as, okay, if your roster size is a little bit bigger than normal, can you still retain everyone and give them the quality experience that they're looking for? And, you know, I hope that's the case here anyway. I want to try to do that. But, you know, until we get done with the draft, until we get into next week, we really won't know that. But I just look at these kids and say, okay, how can we provide the best experience? I think the thing that is going to have to happen, at least with the student athlete themselves and the parents too, is the word patience. I mean, if you're inside of a program and you do have some kids that senior who is going to go out, that's coming back, that's a spot, that's a position. And that freshman who may have gotten that position now has to wait until that senior is done. And that's why I use the word patience. But it's not really an issue during the course of the fall, because you can make everyone happy. But when you get into the spring and then you take that pencil and you write 9 guys into a lineup, there's 27 to 30 others that are not playing. And I think that becomes the issue.
I think the decisions that Major League Baseball made that made me wince the most was the $20,000 cap on players who weren't drafted. In other words, if you're not taking the first five rounds, the most money you can get for a signing bonus is $20,000. And the reason why I winced when I saw that, my first thought was, my goodness, there are going to be Major League caliber players that we never see. You know, I was thinking about Jacob deGrom, who was a ninth-round pick of the Mets, who signed for $95,000. Because he could bet on his future as a baseball player. It gave him a little bit of time. He had a Tommy John and eventually becomes his two-time Cy Young Award winner. Matt Carpenter, Kevin Kiermaier, Matt Adams. You know, baseball's filled with those stories. That was my first, thought. And I'm curious about what you thought when you saw that $20,000 cap.
Well, I don't know what's going to happen with the teams. I think each team has their own personality in terms of how they'll operate with free agency and how they'll operate with those $20,000. I think you'll see some teams that will certainly take advantage of that and some teams that won't. I don't know this for sure, Buster, but I think the $20,000, it leans more toward that, maybe that senior who was thinking of coming back that could potentially sign. Or I guess it could be juniors. That could be juniors who really, really want to play, but the $20,000 and I guess the opportunity to get your last year paid for school, it's something. It's not much because you and I both know that if you play minor league baseball, that typically becomes an investment of yours. You at least in the months that you're playing because of the salary that you get, you're going to end up spending your own money. So, you know, for me, it's an opportunity for a kid, but you know, in our situation, I can't say how our kids will think about it, but at the same time, I think when you have an opportunity to finish your last year in school, maybe that you might think twice about that. But it's just, yeah, it's going to be difficult because there's going to be kids that just won't be able to do it. There's high school kids that will just go to college, obviously. So I really am waiting to see how that will play out because I have no idea. It's the first time we've ever seen it.
Corbs, it really struck me when baseball was shut down, and I communicated with you right after that, how quickly you moved into big picture mode. You know, there wasn't – when I emailed you about some of the inequities that might develop and the hand-wringing for, you know, potential players in the draft, various issues that might pop up, and your response right away was almost – and I'm paraphrasing you – there are bigger things going on in the world right now. I'm curious about sort of how you did that.
Well, I didn't want to get lost in the emotion of it because it was when you're telling your team that we're no longer going to play and we're no longer going to finish our season and be together again. You know, there's an onslaught of emotions, number one from yourself, but more so from the people that you're looking at, because when you're looking at 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, they can't really wrap their mind around it. They still can't. I was on video calls the last couple of nights with the players, and you look in their face, and you can see there's still some wonderment about what the hell is going on here. Can someone please explain what's going on? And you can't. There's still a ton of mystery to what's happening. But at the same time, I told them that, you know, when there's some things that are happening around us that we can no longer control, then you've got to move to the next best action. The next best action is what you can do for yourself in order to improve yourself and improve the people around you. And I think that was immediately the mode I jumped into. The more I try to think about this and what's happening, it doesn't make me feel any better. So I choose just to keep my mind away from that and more on the issues that are in front of us right now and how we can better the situation internally inside our environment at Vanderbilt.
One of the things you've done on your Twitter feed every day, I really enjoyed this. You have a hero starting lineup. You essentially create a baseball card, a virtual baseball card on Twitter for people who are in the medical professional. For example, today you highlighted Dr. Dan Hines. How'd you come up with that idea and what kind of response have you gotten?
Well, a good response, and I'm glad we can take the time to do it. It was just a way to try to honor and keep things light with the medical community, doctors, nurses, everyone who's involved, every ancillary position, because you could see the amount of intensity that was occurring in March and the heaviness that was involved. And I think just to keep morale up, we spoke to our doctor and we talked about this. And Maggie and I woke up one morning and she mentioned an idea about honoring doctors. And I said, yeah, I think we can do that. And then I found this old baseball card and it just kind of spurred on a thought. I designed it a little bit and then I gave it to our graphic designer, Sean Sen, on campus. He designed it, sent it back. And I said, just take a local person or a national for that matter. We recognized Dolly Parton because she gave $1 million to the Vanderbilt University Medical Center. So just anyone who's had a hand in our situation here, we've tried to honor them as best we possibly can. And it's been fun. At what point we'll stop, I'm not sure. We're starting to run out of names right now, but I've enjoyed doing it. And anytime you can think of someone else, it feels good.
How are you going to follow the draft?
Well, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it on the network. So I'll be part of that telecast on Wednesday and some on Thursday. So I guess since we're not preparing to go to Omaha, since today would be the day as of last year that we would be boarding an airplane, we're not going to do that, obviously. So I get to do something else. So I'm going to be in the production studio at Vanderbilt. I'm not going up to Secaucus, but I'll be here and just doing the work with Al Leiter, Dan O'Dowd, and Greg Amsminger, and enjoying that process doing that. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, Corpse. I'm looking forward to it. I'll be watching.
Thank you very much, Buster. It's always good talking to you.
Here's Tim Kirkchin's Daily Baseball Fix about no-hitters.
On this date in 2015, the Giants' Chris Heston threw one of the 303 no-hitters in Major League history. He won 13 games in his career. But Roger Clemens, Greg Maddux, and Grover Alexander together won 1,082 games and never pitched a no-hitter. The Padres have never had a no-hitter. Since their inception in 1969, there have been 136 no-hitters thrown, 10 by the Astros, 10 by the Angels. Nolan Ryan pitched for both of those franchises. He threw a record 7 no-hitters. He threw one in 3 different decades, and the last one he threw at age 44. Hank Aaron, Ted Williams, and Jason Bartlett all made the last out of 2 different no-hitters. Philip Umber's perfect game in 2012 was the only complete game of his career. Tony Peña caught the most games, 1,950, in Major League history of any catcher who never caught a no-hitter. And I covered Mike Witt's perfect game on the final day of the 1984 season. The final out of that game was made by Rangers pinch hitter Marv Foley. It was the final at bat of his Major League career.
That's it for today. Taylor, that was fun hearing from the listeners. You know, I've talked to a couple of them, but not all of them, and it was neat to actually hear their voices.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I appreciate everyone coming on. Everyone was very enthusiastic and excited when we reached out yesterday. Great idea by you, Buster. I mean, it's it was nice because I was going through the Bleacher tweets this morning and I was like, oh, we're kind of getting, you know, some of the same stuff here. But it was nice to hear these thoughts and these feelings verbalized rather than contained to just a small tweet. So very, very nicely done by all the Bleacher tweeters.
And I got to tell you, I talked to people in the industry about this idea of hearing from rapid fire from a number of fans, and people on both sides of the aisle were like, let me know how that goes. They were curious about sort of the collective sentiment of really hardcore baseball fans. So that's really cool that the listeners joined us in that way. My thanks also today to Tim Corbin, to Tim Kirkchin, and to Taylor. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on race is something we should fight every day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.